Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hour number two, late night, right here on Sports Radio WEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you guys as we'll make our way together up until 1 o'clock in the morning. The number to join us here tonight is 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops, and hanging out in the studio with me for a little while longer from WEEI.com. It is Nick Fryer. And Nick, you know, again, you've been there for the extent of this training camp so far. Game two of their exhibition schedule comes up on Friday, game three on Sunday. Then before you know it, it's only a brief four-game exhibition season.
Yeah.
Regular season basketball is going to be here before we know it.
Can't wait.
Neither can I.
Oh.
But I feel like, and I posed this question in the first hour, posed it to the callers, so I'm going to pose it to you as well. So we all know what last year was, and you know people have decided to assign blame in different places. Kyrie Irving gets the majority of it. Terry Rozier takes on a big piece of that blame as well. But I feel like a guy that got sort of out of this thing unscathed is Brad Stevens. Now, he's the golden boy. People love him. But his stock certainly took a hit last year.
Mm-hmm.
Going into last season, he was talked about as a top three head coach in the NBA. He was right up there with he was a baby pop to a lot of people around the league. And this year, not so much. So the question that I asked them, and I'll ask you here, and be as objective as you can, but if the Celtics fail to accomplish what? All right, so if they accomplish blank, Brad Stevens should lose his job. So whether it's a win total or advancement in the playoffs, what is sort of that threshold that this team needs to surpass for Brad's job to be safe?
Okay. I want you to ask Corrales this question, too. I'm very curious what he has to say on this when he comes on.
Will do.
Putting me on that. Whoa, man. For him to not get, I mean, they've been so high on him. For him to not get fired, I feel like it would have to be like, man. It has to be pretty bad. I mean, if they didn't make the playoffs, then yeah, that would be pretty brutal. I mean, if it's...
Let's say they win 45 games and lose in the first round. That's not a fireable offense to you?
I'm trying to think about how they think. I'm not trying to think about how... Are you asking what I would do
I'm asking Wick? You.
If I was Wick, if they get bounced in the first round, I'd seriously consider it. Yeah.
One of my problems, and we talked about this last year quite a bit on the program, one of my problems with the Celtics and how they operate is... longevity and loyalty, I feel like those are things that you don't see in professional sports as much as you used to, and there's a place for them. There certainly is. But I also feel like they have openly endorsed Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge to the point where those guys don't fear for their jobs ever. And, you could make the argument, last year, Danny Ainge was responsible for that team last year. He was responsible for bringing in a guy like Kyrie Irving. Great move at the time, but he was also responsible for not trading him at the trade deadline and getting any assets in return. He saw his team go from minutes away in Game 7 of the NBA Conference Finals to what happened last year, bowing out in essentially a sweep in the second round of the playoffs. If that was any other general manager, he was there for Al Horford's departure after Al Horford said he wants to come back on national TV. 3 weeks later, Al Horford's gone. If that were any other NBA general manager, there would at least be discussion about his job. And here in Boston, it's not even a topic of conversation.
And we actually talked about that on the Five Out podcast. And I think if I'd be more comfortable saying that, I'd think about putting Ainge on the chopping block as opposed to Brad Stevens. Because he doesn't, Brad Stevens only has so much control on the guys that he's bringing in. So I would think that with him, I would be more inclined to say if they get bounced in the first round, then it's your fault. Because the thing is, the Horford one is one that bugs me the most. If you had an idea in March that Kyrie was going to be gone, you need to be figuring out what plan B is, or I guess your next plan A is right from there. And if you want Al to be a part of those plans, and if you think Kemba is a realistic part of those plans, then you need to talk to Al about it and let him know, hey, we're going to do this. And I would think that this team looks – I think our conversation about this team is much different if Al Horford's still here and you have Kemba Walker.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah. is it possible that they just stumbled into Kemba? And I mean that because you had everything happen with Kyrie Irving, but at the same time that was going down, Kemba was overseas with the Jordan brand with Jason Tatum.
Mm.
Now suddenly the Celtics knew that if they didn't extend Al Horford, they didn't offer him, you know, mega bucks here and offer him 3-4 years, $80 to $100 million. If they lowballed him, they knew that he was going to walk away, and at that point it freed up all that money to go sign a guy like Kemba Walker. Now there was a way creatively towards the end where you could have brought Al back, but at that point it was too little too late at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And Al already felt that personal diss, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of irony, by the way, in the fact that, you know, you had guys like Lou over the years here on WEEI hating on Al, hating on that contract, and he signs essentially the same contract at 33 years old.
Would you have paid him that money though? Because I wouldn't have, like, if we didn't know Kemba was coming, I didn't want Al. I didn't think he was a good fit for the Celtics. Anyway.
No, because at that point, the Celtics aren't competing for anything.
Right.
You know, Al Horford,
you're rebuilding.
He can't be the best player on your team and your team be even a good playoff team. Mm-hmm. It's just not who Al Horford is.
No. The perfect three.
Absolutely. So, you know, if there was a way that this thing was mapped out better earlier on in the process and they could have found a way to keep him, absolutely. But I also feel like, you know, to make the point where you talk about Al's value and what he does on a basketball court and does so well. At the end of the day, if you're just a numbers guy, if you're just a box score guy, you're going to look at Al's numbers and you'll look at Cantor's numbers, and they're going to be identical at the end of the season. Offensively, they're both going to average 13 to 14 points a game.
Rebounds,
and 8 to 10 rebounds for Cantor. Al's going to be a little bit less than that, okay?
Yeah.
But essentially the same player offensively. So if you're just looking at the box score and you compare Al's salary to Cantor's salary, doesn't that tell you everything you need to know about all the little things that, you know, Lou mocked Al for? But those little things are worth $104 million.
What is Brad talking about when he talks about Robert Williams and all the big men today? He's talking about the pick and roll defense. Does that show up on the box score? No, it doesn't. Who's the guy he highlighted? Vincent Poirier. What did he do? He played almost 6 minutes. He had one rebound and one steal, and I don't even know how many points he had. He did nothing, but that's the guy who he was most impressed with, because you don't need guys to be scorers all the time. Now, I will admit, I criticized Horford through the years about how there were times where he was too differential with his offense.
Yep.
I felt like, you know, like, come on, man, there's times you have to shoot the ball because you can't stretch the floor, unlike, well, they want Cantor to do that now, too. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, I think that the little things that he did definitely were undervalued. I love how he just take the first chance to go after Lou.
I have to.
Of course.
I have to.
Yes, it's
very, yes. I'm trying to build my brand here, too. You know?
Of course. And that's very on brand.
It is. But, you know, it's just when I look at this team, I still have so many question marks. And if things go, you know, in the right direction for all of these question marks, and this team could certainly win 50-plus games, make their way to a conference finals, and compete to potentially surprise some people, and maybe even make it NBA final. Because I can give you all the question marks that Milwaukee has. I can give you all the question marks on Philadelphia. I'm not a big believer in any team that relies on Tobias Harris to be your best offensive player. I'm just not. You know, Tobias Harris is a very good mm-hmm. NBA player.
Yes.
But I don't see him as a max, you know, guy that you're going to build your team around offensively.
They're building around Ben Simmons because now he can shoot threes.
Yeah, Ben Simmons, anybody that, whatever.
It was like they won the NBA Finals when he hit that shot.
I know. I just don't get it. So it is Sports Radio, WEI. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Room for you guys here tonight, 617-779-7937. Let's go to John. John's in Maine. John, you're next up here on Late Night.
Hey, how are we doing, Pat?
What's up, Johnny?
First time caller. How are we doing, Nick?
Thanks
for being
on.
Yeah. So I've got kind of like a two-part question. I called in. I wanted to ask a little bit about the Celtics. And I wanted to get you guys' take on NFL if we can talk that, but just shooting the breeze. But
hey, go ahead.
In any case, is Boston still a big market for the NBA talent that, you know, do we have the talent that you guys think it would take to win? Or are we in that, like, bizarre, almost constant rebuild that we've seemed to be in since 2008, you know, since we had the big three and everything?
So, yeah, I think the Celtics have done a very good job here attracting premier free agents to this franchise, to this team. Unfortunately for them, John, you know, you get a guy who was the number one guy on the market a couple of years ago in Gordon Hayward. He was an all-star in the Western Conference. He was supposed to be a game changer. He gets hurt immediately. Al Horford was supposed to be a complimentary piece on a team that we thought could win a championship. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. You got Kyrie Irving here within a year of him coming here. He says he wants to be here for the rest of his career. That blew up in their face. But the Celtics' problem right now, anyways, isn't their inability to attract premier players. That's for sure. But when you look at the teams that are considered contenders right now, especially in the Eastern Conference, look at a team like Milwaukee, look at a team like Philadelphia, and then you look at a guy like Joel Embiid and Giannis. Those guys are drafted by those teams. They're homegrown. And then because they were drafted by those teams, you control their rights for the first 4 years of their career on a rookie salary. That gives you the flexibility to go spend your cap money elsewhere and bring in, you know, second, third, fourth type players around your superstars. And that's what I feel like it really takes in the NBA to build a perennial contender, as opposed to what the Celtics built back in 2008.
Excellent. Another quick question.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm going to get to my NFL question.
Yep.
Is defense back? What do you think? Are we seeing good defenses, or are we seeing struggling offenses over the league? I mean, we're seeing teams put 30-plus points up, and what L.A. and Tampa did, I mean, that was kind of a bizarre game, in my opinion, just to see those two teams put up 85 points between the – or was it 95? I don't even remember.
Yeah, that's right. You're ballpark.
You know, you look at what the Patriots are being talked about as a historic defense. Hightower coming out calling them the Boogeymen. Love that name. But you're seeing a lot of really good defense. You're seeing San Fran basically put Cleveland. Cleveland played like garbage. Baker played like garbage. I know, you know, that's how the narrative's going. But we're seeing a lot of really good defense. The Bills, the Pats. We're also seeing some trash teams. But I think in this era where everyone's talking about how, you know, it's getting harder and harder to play defense, maybe they're playing within the rules and defense is now acclimating to that. Or, yeah, I know it's not the hard hitting from the past, but is defense getting better and is that what it's going to take?
I think
that's my call. So I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
John, I appreciate the phone call, man.
I thought he was asking, is the Patriots defense back? So I was going to say, they were pretty darn good last year, too. But, yeah, I think league-wide, eventually these guys are going to make the adjustments along the way with the rules as they've been changing through the years, and it just gets more and more difficult for them. But I think as we've seen the game kind of become more, I don't want to say, kind of one-dimensional, where the ground game has become obsolete in a lot of ways. I know that some teams are trying to, are still using those featured backs, but as that becomes less and less of a thing, now teams are going to be more focused on how we're going to stop the passing game. So that, I think, helps the defense then kind of game plan more efficiently.
Well, offenses, yeah, they're more one-dimensional now than they've ever been. So defenses only have to really focus in on one type of a defense out there when the run game really isn't all that much of a threat right now in the NFL. The days of having the premier running back sort of take the place of the premier quarterback and that being a recipe for success, I feel like that was the late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh, yeah.
It's not anymore right now. But by the way, that's another reason why, you know, Tom Brady, it's hard to judge if his skills are diminishing or not because, you know, he's healthy, but he can use all that knowledge that he's had over the last 20 years to pick apart that defense. It does give him an unfair advantage. So while teams hone in on Tom, and it does rattle him a little bit, he generally knows the next sort of progression to go to, next one to go to, where younger quarterbacks, guys that don't have that experience, they're not able to draw on 20 years of history in their brain to know what's coming at them.
You know, that's a good point because I always feel like the narrative now, especially for anybody who wants to hate on Tom Brady, it's, well, is it easier to be a quarterback in the league now than it ever has because quarterbacks are protected so immensely and everything like that, and especially Tom because he's been around so long. You touch him and then it's like, oh, it's a roughing the passer or whatever. But that's a good point, too. I mean, like the fact that they're now so focused on stopping the passing game, that's going to make it harder for all the quarterbacks. But Brady's kind of been in that transitional phase where he's at an advantage. And these younger guys, it makes it much tougher for them, for sure.
It does. And it could, you know, barring health, again, it could certainly extend his career for the next 2 or 3 years, just having that psychological advantage over literally everybody else in the NFL. So, Nick, this was fun, man. You got to come hang out with me more often.
You let me know, Gilroy.
All right,
you
I will. That's what we do here. I see you in the hall. I bring you in. We talk some basketball. My basketball sort of comrades around the station, they're few and far between.
Oh, that's for damn sure.
Ordway thinks he's one, but it's just not.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Whenever I want to talk 80s basketball, that's my guy.
Yeah,
that's
for sure.
My guy right there. I want to reminisce about the good old days. That's my guy.
Well, like you said, Gilroy, all they want to talk about here is football all the time. And I get it. Football's king right now. But Glenn has a ton of basketball takes that he wants to share.
He does.
I just wish he would, you know, let him out more. But he's got to deal with Lou all the time, who's always like, you know. Yeah,
he can share them with us. Invite him on your podcast. How's that?
There we go. Yeah, I'll get some 80s basketball stories.
There you go. All right, Nick Fryer right there. Check him out, WEI.com. My name is Patrick Gilroy. When we come back, we'll be joined by John Corrales of MassLive.com. And there's plenty of time and room for you guys at 617-779-7937.
The Greg Hill Show, morning 6 to 10. Now here's what's trending on WEI.
At 11:23 p.m., here's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com. The Patriots, they practice today in a walkthrough fashion. Due to the short week, the Patriots still play on Thursday night. Philip Dorsett, he's sitting out with a hamstring injury. Rex Burkett, Patrick Chung, Josh Gordon, Julian Edelman, they were all limited in practice today. Rob Gronkowski, he's been hired by Fox Sports to be a regular analyst. His debut comes your way this Thursday when the Patriots take on the Giants. Celtics center Robert Williams, he tweaked his groin at practice today. Head coach Brad Stevens said team doctors don't think it's anything too big. Their next preseason game comes your way Friday night in Orlando. The Chinese government, they issued a statement today saying they are strongly dissatisfied with NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. This comes after he issued a statement of support with Rockets general manager Daryl Morey. Morey, he went out of his way to support the protests occurring in Hong Kong, China. They fired back, announcing they will not air two NBA preseason games on their local television stations. The Bruins, they're in Vegas tonight taking on the Golden Knights. The Bruins currently up 4-2 in that one. We'll continue to keep you guys updated here until that one comes to an end. And Tampa Bay, they beat the Astros tonight 4-1, forcing a win or go home in Game 5 to determine who plays the Yankees in the ALCS. And my name is Patrick Gilroy, and that's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is late night right here on Sports Radio WEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you guys as we'll make our way together up until 1 o'clock this morning. The number to join us here is 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And a big thank you goes out to Nick Fryer for hanging out with us the last couple of minutes here on WEI. And, you know, you'll find his stuff now, WEI.com. He's been covering the Celtics full-time here for a little while. And it's great to have that sort of inside player here working for the station full-time. It's something that we haven't had. You know, we had Josue Pavone last year, my former podcast partner, and he was great. But Josue was sort of, he was all over the place doing the CLNS stuff, doing our stuff here. So now we got Nick, and he's been in there and in the trenches doing his thing, and he's brought a new element of Celtics coverage to WEI.com. And selfishly, that's been awesome for me. So I'm excited about it. I'm sure you guys will hear from Nick quite a bit coming up here during the NBA season, especially here on late night as well as on the weekends with Fitzy and myself coming your way on Tuesday and on Saturday afternoon. So it is Sports Radio, WEI, room for you guys, 617-779-7937. Joining me on the phone right now, NBA beat guy, Celtics beat guy from MassLive.com. You guys know him from the Locked On Celtics podcast. You probably used to know him from RedsArmy.com. He's all over the place, but now doing his thing exclusively with MassLive.com, my good friend John Corrales. John, welcome back to the program here on Sports Radio WEI.
Happy to be back now that basketball's back.
It's always a good sign when you guys start coming out of the woodwork. The podcast really increases. You know, there's a certain group of Celtics guys that over the last week or 10 days, John, the visibility has sort of gone through the roof, and I can't get enough of it.
Yeah, it's fun. Like, we had so much downtime where we're still trying to pump out content, but it was all, like, theoretical crap. And now we actually have, like, a basketball game to look at and practices to talk about. And now we're starting to see people like do things well and make mistakes. And now we can start reacting to things. So it's great. It's nice to see.
Yeah, it's exciting. And look, you know, we'll get right into it here. And, you know, I asked Nick Fryer something, and the first thing he said before he answered, he said, you got to ask John that question. So before we get into all of our analysis of the Celtics and the NBA and what our expectations are for this year, the good, the bad, all of it, I'll ask you the same thing that I asked Nick. And it's a pretty simple question, but based off of what we saw last year and the Celtics not, you know, living up to expectations, regardless of who you want to blame, if the Celtics, you know, essentially, I hate asking this, but if the Celtics fail to accomplish what? So if the Celtics fail to win or accomplish what, Brad Stevens should lose his job. So fill in the blank. You know, what's this team's minimum threshold for Brad Stevens' job to be safe at the end of this season?
I feel like his job is pretty much safe no matter what. But I would say that everything would need to go wrong. Like, literally everything. Like, he would have to completely lose control of this team. That none of the guys get along, that everybody's playing selfish, that the team is losing games, like winnable games. Like, it would have to be blatantly obvious. And so I just don't see any of that happening. Not just because I think Brad Stevens can hold it together, but I don't think those are the types of guys that this team is made of. So I think it would take an unmitigated disaster for Brad Stevens to lose his job this season.
And John, the reason why I ask is because, you know, you've got a certain percentage of Celtics fans out there that all too willingly and easily sort of want to point all of the blame on last year on the shoulders of Kyrie Irving and Terry Rozier. And while they certainly deserve a decent portion of the blame for what went wrong last year, you know, you also have the voices out there that like to say that, you know, Brad had a hard time with Rondo. I don't necessarily find that factual, but that's a narrative out there. And then Brad had a hard time with Kyrie Irving. You know, they sort of expect Brad to have a hard time with Kemba Walker. And you know, if Brad goes 0-for-3 with legit stars in the NBA, guys that have got healthy star-type egos, then does this team have a bigger problem moving forward, having a coach on the bench that's unable to effectively communicate with the guys that have the biggest egos in the league?
I don't know that Kemba fits that mold, but yeah, that's the criticism right now. Like, if there's one knock on Brad Stevens, it's that he hasn't been able to break through the guys who don't subscribe to his approach. Like, I think the most telling thing about Brad Stevens coming into this season was when I asked him on media day what the lessons were, his answer was the things that I believed about basketball have been reinforced. Something like that. I forget the exact quote. And to me, that told me that last year, some things maybe kind of got away from him. And in fact, when I asked Jaylen Brown about Brad Stevens' growth, he said that in 4 years here, everything's been pretty consistent except for last season in terms of approach. So last season, somehow, some way, there was some sort of compromise. I don't know exactly what. I don't know exactly to what degree, but there was some level of compromise from Brad Stevens. And it's pretty obvious that it has to do with Kyrie. You know, megastar type of attitude, superstar player, a contract year, all of that stuff. there are concessions that tend to be made in those situations. I think Brad Stevens came into this year kind of like, no, none of that anymore. You either buy in or forget it. And so I think that's kind of where they are. And I think Kemba Walker is a buy-in kind of guy, even though he's been a star, third-team All-NBA. Like, he's been – like, he's very, very appreciative of his opportunity to play for the Boston Celtics. Like, if he won 49 games this year, it'd be the best season of his career. So I think the stars have aligned a little bit for Brad in terms of dealing with players.
Does Kemba Walker have to change his game at all from the guy that made him an all-star in Charlotte to be effective here in Boston?
I don't think he has to change much. I mean, I think he's going to be a driving kind of ball dominant kind of guy that's going to try to work the ball around. I think some of the stuff that he did in Charlotte was out of necessity. We'll see if that's really, really true. There are times where he gave the ball up in Charlotte and it just ended up coming back to him because there are situations where the teammates that he had were like, no, it's your turn. You go. This year, he's going to have Jason Tatum, who I think is, you know, super confident in what he's been able to do this year. Gordon Hayward, I think, is getting closer to the old Gordon Hayward. So those guys aren't going to be like, oh, Kemba, save us. Like, there's going to be a more democratic kind of process in clutch situations. So when Kemba does pass it, he's going to have, first of all, better teammates where he's going to get maybe another assist or two per game, and teammates who are willing to do some of the things that Kemba had to do. So I don't think he's going to have to come in and make material changes to his game. I think some of the things that he has done will kind of lead to some different results just by virtue of being on a better team.
It is Sports Radio WEI. It is late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Joining me on the line right now from MassLive.com is John Corrales. You guys read his stuff, MassLive.com. Also check out the Locked On Celtics podcast. Find him on Twitter at @RedsArmy_John. And John, you mentioned Gordon Hayward. Look, he's going into year three with the Boston Celtics. Really his first opportunity to make a legitimate impact on this team this year. You know, last year he had his ups and downs, more downs than ups, but all of the optimism sort of permeating throughout training camp is really, it's really been overwhelming if you're a Gordon Hayward guy, to the point where Danny Ainge over the weekend sort of tried to tone it down a little bit and reset fans' expectations because things have been coming out of training camp that are super optimistic about the way that he has looked in scrimmages, the way that his teammates are talking about him. So, John, I mean, you tell me, this guy was a 25-point-a-game scorer for Utah, a playoff Utah team, a very good Utah team, their number one option, and above the rim, get to the free throw line, really killer-type mentality on the floor. Are you trying to tell us, and are Celtics beat guys and media guys trying to set fans' expectations that Gordon Hayward legitimately can return to that type of level right away this year?
Well, you say right away, right? It's been 2 years. So right away is a long time from when he got hurt. I think that there are a couple of signs that you look at and say, what are we going to get with Gordon Hayward? In that first preseason game, he attacked the basket. I think he had 6 attempts at the rim, which is something that he didn't do much last year. And that comes with confidence and a little bit of explosiveness. There was one time where he wanted to go up and dunk it, and he just didn't have the legs. And I think just being in that first basketball game, the guys were a little bit more winded than they expected. But we're only getting short glimpses right now. They raised the shades, so we got to see like 5 minutes of scrimmage today. I saw Gordon Hayward like bring the ball up a couple times, but he was moving pretty fast, and he was really, really aggressive in trying to attack the rim. So, the chorus of Gordon Hayward is back has been loud. It's been kind of, like you said, a little overwhelming. Got to take into account that Enes Kanter is one of the guys that's been leading this charge, and Enes has been known to be a little bit over the top with the things that he says, in very much his WWE style.
Sure.
But, and even Ainge, well, you know, I was sitting there watching him say, you know, I want to temper the expectations, but Gordon's back to being Gordon Hayward. Well, by saying he's back to being Gordon Hayward, like you said in the setup here, he was a Western Conference All-Star, like a legitimate 25-point a game scorer. Like, saying he's back to being Gordon Hayward is not tempering expectations. It's raising them.
Exactly. So, and that's why I had you on the show tonight, because, you know, there's a let's face it, John, there's a certain group of Celtic media members that are card-carrying green teamers. And while you are certainly a Celtics guy, a Celtics fan, you're also a basketball purist. You're probably, you know, I think that defines you best when it comes to your ability to objectively break things down. And you look at things from a former player's point of view. We've talked about this before. So, you know, if you're comparing what you saw from Gordon Hayward in February or March of last year, is there a noticeable difference in your mind's eye to what you're seeing right now?
Yeah, sure. I mean, like I said, the aggressiveness, the type of plays that he's trying to make, I think in the beginning of last year, if we look just a full season ago, where he was making drives specifically to make passes. And there was that little stretch where he was getting a few passes off and then defenses were realizing like, oh, he's not really driving to score. So he was starting, his turnovers kind of went up early last season. Well, now he's driving to score. And that's a big deal because that opens everything up. And just the way he's attacking, it's just a little bit different mentality than the way he was attacking last year. Like towards the end, we saw some of it, I think, against the Indiana Pacers when Miles Turner dunked on him. And when he came down and tried to dunk on Miles Turner, like all of a sudden we were like, whoa,
yeah,
whoa, that's the old Gordon Hayward. Well, that mentality, that thing is starting to come back now. And he said, like, he's been here all summer at the practice facility. And the confidence comes from repetition and building those habits. And he's had a summer full of repetition and injury-free, restriction-free. So he's back to at least somewhat of that mentality of go attack. And everything will come off of playing aggressively. So we'll see. We've got tiny bits of evidence. I see little tiny things. Now we'll have to see him put it together. Can he do the same thing against Orlando? Orlando's a big team that protects the rim very well. Can he be just as aggressive going up against shot blockers and going into the trees? Like, that's the next little bit of evidence that we're going to see. But so far, the little bit of things that I've seen, yeah, I definitely see a different kind of Gordon Hayward.
And part of the challenge for me when callers call in or friends, you know, talk to me about the Celtics and what I expect of the Celtics this year, John, is that, you know, Gordon is still a bit of an unknown. So if Gordon takes that leap back to what he once was, and then the next two questions are essentially the same question for two different guys. It's Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They had been making steady progressions in their progress year over year. And then last year, it sort of got stagnant a little bit for the both of them. They didn't make their next step in their progression last year. You know, both guys look primed to take that leap this year. Jaylen Brown's a guy that, you know, like it or not, he's entering restricted free agency, and there's rumblings that he's looking for $100 million deal as he's seeing some of his draft class go out and acquire right now. So he's got to have that thing in the back of his mind. Jason Tatum clearly walking around with a bit of that swagger. He's reminding me more and more of Paul Pierce on the court. That was his comp coming out of college, watching him in game one of the exhibition schedule. I'm seeing some more of the reasons for that comparison with his ability to get to the rim and really finish strong at the rim, create that contact, and now the confidence to take that three-pointer rather than drive in and take the bad two. There's something there with him where he looks like he's ready to take that next step into stardom. But these are my concerns, because for the Celtics to max out their potential, Gordon Hayward's got to take a step back to what he was, and then Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have to take the next step in their progression into stardom. And for all three of those things to go right during one NBA season, I feel like is kind of a big ask when you go back and you realistically look at teams, look at their question marks. How many of those question marks actually wind up panning out in a positive direction?
Yeah, I mean, this is the time where everybody's super optimistic, and because it's early on, No one's gotten hurt. No one's gotten pissed off. None of these things have gone horribly wrong. All we have is positive things coming out of camps, because most of it's positive. Like the negatives that have come out of camp so far, well, we saw like the bigs not play particularly well in the first preseason game, at least defensively. Everything else is kind of like rosy. So it's easy to go down that road of, well, yeah, today everybody's talking about Jason Tatum's maturity and confidence. And yeah, he looks like he's got that something there. And okay, now you start to project out. Can he be a 20-point-a-game scorer? Can he be 22, 23, 25-point-a-game scorer? Okay, yeah, sure, he can be. Kemba Walker can come in and be the third-team All-NBA guy. And Gordon Hayward can be back. And all of these things seem plausible. But like you said, it never works out. The best-case scenario never pans out. The best-case scenario for these Boston Celtics can be pretty damn good, because a Gordon Hayward that's back to Utah Gordon Hayward, a Tatum that takes a leap, Kemba that becomes remains an All-NBA level type player. Those three things alone make the Celtics tremendously dangerous. Is it Clippers level dangerous? I don't think so, but like, still a much bigger threat to come out of the East than most people think. But how many of those things last? At some point, somebody sprains an ankle, somebody gets hit. Jaylen Brown has a tendency to kind of have something happen to him every once in a while, that it's maybe bad luck or whatever. Sometimes, like you mentioned, the contractual stuff. I mean, he's watching Jamal Murray get a $170 million extension. Now, Jaylen says all the right things. He says, I'm just going to play basketball and let things fall where they may. If that's true, if he's actually telling the truth there, then great. That'll be great. But I know if I was a 22-year-old with $170 million on the line, it'd be pretty damn hard for me to kind of put that aside and say, oh, yeah, I'm just going to let the chips fall where they may. Like, no, I think there is going to be some chips out there that you want to go grab, right?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's life-changing money, not only for your life, but for your family's life, your kids' life, your grandkids' life in one contract. And, you know, again, the NBA is in sort of this space where they're spending tremendous amounts of money right now. Eventually, this thing comes in ebbs and flows. He wants to cash in while the opportunity is there. That has to be in the back of his mind. But last one from me tonight, John, real quick, is, you know, this taco fever taking over, and you know, it was certainly a fun moment at the Garden, and even more fun than him being introduced to the crowd was him coming in and having an impact. But lost sort of in the afterglow of taco fever was what I felt like was the surprise story of the game, and that was Javonte Green. I mean, it was 26-year-old guy, rookie that played overseas, looked the part for a little while out there, 15 points, the ability to finish explosively at the basket. But realistically, when you look at this team, you look at how many young guys, how many rookies, realistically, is this team going to carry? They've got a certain number that are first-round picks that they almost have to carry. So the space for a guy like Taco and a guy like Green, realistically, I don't think both of those guys can make the final roster cut here. So, you know, who do you think out of those two has a higher NBA ceiling, or is more likely to make the Celtics big club out of the gate this year?
Well, I hesitate to overreact to Javonte Green dunking all over the end of Charlotte's preseason bench.
It was fun to watch, man. It was fun to watch.
It was amazing to watch. Like, I'll be honest, like, that atmosphere in the Garden for preseason game number one, I've never experienced that before. For a preseason game, like the taco mania, and then to have Javonte come in and dunk like he's, you know, prime Dominique Wilkins, like that was just nuts to see. But people get caught up in the flash. He played very well. No doubt he played very well. But, you know, he went through a summer league where he didn't have that big an impact. He had some good moments there. I think Green is probably more destined to be a camp cut and then signed with the main red clause if he sticks with Boston. I mean, he may be a camp cut and he gets, you know, maybe the Abdel Nader kind of end of bench type of treatment somewhere, and he hooks on, but I don't think he's destined to have this great. I could be wrong, but he's bounced around a little bit already. I would say he's probably not going to make it. I've heard some suggestions that people say, oh, you got to cut Brad Wanamaker. No, the Celtics are kind of short on ball handlers. They're not going to do that. Taco, I think, is more likely to make it. I think that people need to calm down. I think, you know, like, part of this is like his name is Taco. So people are like, whoa, that's bizarre. So they get latched onto that. And then obviously he's 7.5 feet tall. So people are very curious about that. He came in and did a couple of nice things, again, in a very garbage time against a garbage team situation. I think Taco is more likely to stay if they can maybe maneuver the end of their bench and give him at least an opportunity to go down to the Red Claws and just try some things out. He does some things well, especially for his size. He moves better than you would think a guy that size moves. He's not like Boban Marjanovic, who is kind of clunky when he moves. But you also saw in that game that if he doesn't get the ball like right at the basket, he can't put the ball on the floor. You just rush him, he's going to turn the ball over. So there's some serious limitations to Taco. I hate to be the guy that kind of rains on that parade.
No, do it. Do it, because I came in tonight, John, and I said to my producer, Joe, I said, do you know how hard it is to be a 7'5" basketball prospect and go undrafted, you know, through two rounds of the draft? That is a very difficult thing to do.
Right. Like, he didn't, like, does anybody remember what UCF did? No, because they didn't do anything. Like, they weren't a good team. And it's sure, he can grow as a player, and people love him as a person. Like, to a man, everybody on that team, they just love Taco because he's a genuinely, like, nice guy. Like, he is very easygoing about everything. He kind of rolls with everybody asks him the same dumb questions that you ask a 7.5 foot tall guy. Oh, what size shoe do you wear? Oh, do you have to duck every time you walk through a door? Yeah, no, yeah, of course he does. 7.5 feet tall. Like, he wears a ridiculous size shoe, but he graciously answers those questions.
Yep.
He's out there really trying to work hard. He's legitimately trying to work hard, and he really does have an emphasis about working in his community, wherever that is. He really wants to give back. Like, charity and community is a big deal to him. So all of this is a means to an end for him. He wants to have that great career because he wants to give back. And so you can't help but find yourself rooting for the guy. But the reality is, 7.5 foot guy has things that make him unique and great, as far as like, park him in the lane and he'll block some shots and he will immediately deter people from driving, and he'll have like the dunk without jumping type of thing. But he just, by virtue of being that tall, it's hard for him to slide. It's hard for him to maneuver himself. He doesn't move. He moves well for his size, but he still doesn't move quite as well as you might need a center to move. He's obviously not stretching the floor. And like I said, he can be turnover prone because you forget, 7.5 feet tall, he's going up against big, strong guys. A 6'10 guy can get low, can get below his center of gravity and just push him out 3-4 feet. And then he catches the ball at a spot where he can't do anything. And like I said, he can't dribble. He can't drive. So he has to just pass it up. And it starts to become a little bit more of a negative on the floor than he does a positive. He's great situationally. I think he might have a spot at the end of a bench where you bring him in to guard an inbounds pass, to protect the rim in certain weird situations. But I just want to temper the expectations for Taco. Like, he also may not even make this team. So we need to kind of like get that in our heads. He's not going to be a starter. He's not going to be a rotation guy. If anything, the best case scenario is end of bench. They give him a chance to really have a full season so they can see how he reacts to a significant amount of NBA or close to that level basketball.
All right, John Corrales, I appreciate you staying up late with us. And look, they're only one game into their preseason schedule here. So we got a long way to go, but it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to hearing you again here on the program sometime soon, Johnny.
You got it.
All right, there he goes, John Corrales. Check out his stuff, masslive.com. Find him on Twitter, @RedsArmy_John. Also check out the podcast, Locked on Celtics. My name is Patrick Gilroy. This is Late Night, 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. When we come back, we'll, of course, continue some of the Celtic conversation, also start to mix in some of this Tom Brady conversation and the overreaction of my my coworkers and my colleagues here in the media trying to decipher, trying to figure out, trying to tap in to Tom Brady's brain. When the hell are we going to learn that we don't have any idea what Tom Brady, what Bill Belichick, what any of these guys are actually thinking about? All that and your phone calls when we come back right here on Sports Radio WEI.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
It is late night right here on Sports Radio WEI. Big thank you goes out to John Corrales for joining us here in the last segment. I'm sure you guys will be able to pick that up on WEI.com sometime in the overnight hour tonight. Producer Joe back there, he'll make sure it gets up there. And
absolutely.
John Corrales is the best. He's very analytical when it comes to talking about the Celtics. And occasionally when you're a fanboy like me, you need an analytical guy to come in and set you straight a little bit. And John has had that role in my life for the last 15 years or so. John's always been the go-to guy to sort of set me straight. And for anybody that was experiencing taco fever, John really quelled that a little bit tonight.
Yeah, he shut me down pretty good.
Poured some cold water on you back there, Joe.
I'm not feeling the whole taco fever anymore after listening to that.
What'd he say? You can't shoot, you can't dribble, you can't pass.
Which is, 97% of the game.
So if he catches it anywhere outside of 3 feet outside the basket, there's going to be a problem for Taco Fall.
But I'm more concerned about, his offensive side. I think his defense will be just a presence in a sense, because his wingspan's huge. I mean, it is still tough to shoot around, but somebody with a jumper or anything like that, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, he's going to be up faked out of his pants a few times, I'm sure. So, we'll look forward to watching Taco and what comes next for the Celtics coming up on Friday in Orlando, then back home on Sunday, and so on and so forth as this team inches closer to the regular season. So, big thanks goes out to John. Check his stuff out, masslive.com. Check out the podcast, Locked on Celtics, lockedonceltics.com. And, of course, you find him on Twitter, @RedsArmy_John. So 2 hours down on the show, 1 hour to go. When we come back, we'll mix in some more of your Celtics thoughts, but I do want to get into some of this Patriots stuff, because if you listen to the national media, you listen to the national media today, guys like Nick Wright doing his thing. Nick Wright can't help but troll the Patriots. You would think that Tom Brady is having a down season. You would think that Tom Brady's having a bad year. You would think that Tom Brady is an abysmal quarterback based on what these guys say. Meanwhile, Tom Brady is, depending on what you look at, he's clearly a top 10 quarterback as a consensus, ranked, between 5 and 7. But right now, Tom Brady, 10 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. I feel like his team being 5-0, all that stuff combined. And by the way, for all the problems the offensive line has had, only 7 sacks on Tom Brady so far this year. Go take a look at the sack numbers around the NFL. We're talking premier quarterbacks with 13, 15, 18 sacks, 20 sacks already given up. So
and we're talking about quarterbacks who are a little more mobile than Tom Brady.
That's the thing. The story about Tom Brady's demise has been wildly overplayed by the national media based on one subpar game so far this year. So there's that. But then there's the stuff that drives me crazy. And I do want to get into this. It's, you know, Tom Brady took to the microphone earlier today. And again, every time he does, we sit here and we try to analyze what he's thinking about while he's speaking. And it drives me absolutely bananas. Is he a human being? Yeah. Is he pissed off that he had a great toy? Like, my son, I spent $100 and some odd and bought him the drone of his dreams. I spent $30, bought him a piece of crap drone, and it was terrible. And I bought him a legit drone, a drone that was so good that he loved it every day for about a week. And then on day 8, he flew the drone, and suddenly my son's 8-year-old balls swelled. And he said, you know what? I am not going to fly this thing within the parameters that my parents gave me. And he got it stuck at the top of a 100-foot-tall tree. And it is there, and it is there until the snow knocks it down at some point, okay?
What, you're not going up on a ladder again?
I'm not going up on a ladder ever again, Joe. It's not happening again. Okay, so is my son pissed off? Is he disappointed that he no longer has his favorite toy? Of course he is. Am I going to replace his favorite toy with another toy that costs $100? No chance. Will I get him another $40 drone? I will. So Tom Brady's coming to the realization right now that his $100 toy that he thought he had is at the top of a tree. He'll never get to play with it again, and he's going to be replaced with something like a Michael Crabtree off a scrap heap. Okay? That is tough to take if you're Tom Brady. But it's no different than the mentality of my 8-year-old son. And I'm not going to sit here and try to overanalyze that either. So it is Sports Radio, WEI. When we come back, we'll get into the Patriots, get into some of this Tom Brady stuff, and the over-analysis of every stinking word that this guy says. All that and your phone calls when we come back right here on Sports Radio, WEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.